Tonight is Tuesday night, April 9th. This is the women's Mishnah Gemara share. Tonight we're doing some Minyanei Pesach. Okay, Rabotai. I'd like to focus on a couple of things on the Seder, things which we have not spoken about in the past. As always, subject to a machloikas or rishonim as to how to understand them, and hopefully we can gain an appreciation of several of these items. So on page 24a, at the end of the first line of the Gemara, a statement in the name of Rava, Omar Rava in line 2, Matzah tzorich lehagbia. Umaror tzorich lahagbia. Basar ain tzorich lahagbia. Sometime during the Seder, he doesn't say when, one should pick up the matzah, one should pick up the maror. However, the meat, which is the shank bone, you should not pick up. Vilood, not only should you not pick it up, Elo Shinira Keochel Kachim Bachutz. If you were to pick up the meat at a certain time in the middle of the Seder, it would generate the impression that I have Bisar Pesach here in Teaneck, New Jersey, and that would be a violation of the Isur of eating Kachim out of wherever they are permitted to be eaten. So the Korban Pesach, being in the category of Kachim Kalim, are permitted to be eaten in all of Yerushalayim. All of Yerushalayim. So in order to avoid that appearance that I'm eating Kachim out of Yerushalayim, therefore do not pick it up. Fine. One word about what constitutes the parameters of Yerushalayim. So, according to the Gemara, whenever it talks about it, it refers to within the walled city of Yerushalayim, which we would call the Old City. However, the majority of Yerushalayim, where the majority of the residents of Yerushalayim live, is not yet halachically Yerushalayim, and will easily be designated as Yerushalayim for eating korbanot purposes, as well as eating maaser sheni. You are obligated to take 10% of your produce and bring it to Yerushalayim and eat it, by a process where the Bet Din, members of the Sanhedrin Hagadol, will come to the Inbal Hotel and watch as somebody eats a korban shlamim or a korban toda there under their auspices for the purpose of sanctifying it with the sanctity of Yerushalayim Yer HaKodesh. So it has to be what is naturally sanctified is within the walls. In order to expand upon the chomot of Yerushalayim, you need somebody to engage in an activity that has to be done inside the walls in the presence of a member of the Sanhedrin, three members of the Sanhedrin, who now declare we are sanctifying this new place as a result of the consumption of the meat of this korban at this time under our presence. So that's what is done to the rest of Yerushalayim. So since
the... Sure. So isn't the sanctification by Hashem, not by man?
Yes.
How did they decide? Like, you could decide that
the deen
is...
Right. But the sanctification of HaKadosh Baruch Hu was just the original Yerushalayim. He did not necessarily sanctify the Inbal Hotel.
Right. So
the Gemara tells us that we have a right to expand upon Israel, Yerushalayim, and the Beit HaMikdash.
Right.
We can expand upon the Beit HaMikdash and endow it with Kedushas HaMikdash. So the Gemara gives us that opportunity. It's the original sanctified by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The rest, we have the right to expand.
Does it have to be contiguous?
No, does not.
It can be anywhere.
Anywhere.
What about like Ir David, which was part of the original, but wasn't within the wall?
So that is not sanctified with Kedushat Yerushalayim yet.
Okay.
That is correct. It all will be. Soon as that Sanhedrin appears. No, you don't need Mashiach. You need a Sanhedrin. But unfortunately, it's not going to happen until
the Mashiach.
Yes. Yeah. So, if you take a look on the left-hand side, the Rashbam, he tells us when Rava is talking about, and this is our practice, even though many people will follow the practice in the next source as well. So the Rashbam says in the caption, Sarach Lahagbiya, when does this take place? Kisha Omer Matzah Zu Sha'anu Ochlin. When we recite Rabban Gamliel's it is customary, according to Rava, obligatory to raise the matzah and say matzah zu sha'anu ochlin al shuma, and maror ze sha'anu ochlin al shuma. And he gives an explanation why do we do it? Kidei lehar otan limisubim. To show it to all of the people who are attending your Seder, v'teichovev mitzvah be'eineihen. And they will consider this mitzvah very precious. It's a difficult explanation. Why should this be the only item where on a Yom Tov, where there are mitzvot affiliated with every Yom Tov, only the matzah and the maror have to be picked up so that we should develop chavivut, an attachment, a love for those mitzvot. You can say the same thing about a lulav and esrog, that on the first day of Sukkot, somebody should, at the table, pick up a lulav and esrog and show it to everybody. And we should say, oh, why? Because you want to cherish that particular mitzvah. It's very difficult. But nonetheless, that's what the Rashbam says. V'chein b'tshuvas hageonim. And this interpretation, which I found, is not my own. I found it in the responsa of the Geonim, who were a couple of generations before the Rashbam. D'ha d'amar tzarech lahagbia haynu matzah zu de'agadata. It refers to when you recite Matzah Zu She'anu Ochlim, that's when you're supposed to pick it up. That's when you're supposed to pick up the matzah. Fine. However, there is another explanation as to why you should pick it up. That one.
Picking it up gives you a possession.
Yeah.
Surely you do that by lulav.
You,
that's a thing.
No, but no, but that's in order to transfer it to somebody else. I don't have to.
No,
I don't have to pick up something that I already own. I own the matzah. It's mine. It's my house. It's your house.
Right. I thought it was demonstrated.
Right.
You want to demonstrate ownership.
Of course. It's the same way that the carbon has to be yours, and you would eat it in your makom.
Okay, it's an interesting
that's
thought.
By lulav, but by lulav, we know it has to be yours. Okay. No one said the matzah has to be yours.
Okay, so that's my next point. You can use that for next year's share. For you, I mean, your share. There is no pasuk whatsoever that indicates that matzah has to be your own. However, the majority of Rishonim believe that it is one of the comparisons that we make between Tetvav, Tetvav. We compare the 15th day of the month of Nisan to the 15th day of the month of Tishrei, Sukkot. And this has many, many aspects to it. The most famous one is that you have to eat in the sukkah the first night, no matter what the weather is. The Torah doesn't say specifically to eat the first night of sukkah. The Torah says, live in the sukkah for 7 days. But by matzah, it says, bo'erev tochlu matzot. You have to eat matzah the first night. So Chazal learn out from this hekesh, tesvav, tesvav, that you have to eat in the sukkah the first night. The rest of Sukkot, you can eat vegetables and meat and fish and not have to eat in the sukkah. Because theoretically, you must eat in the sukkah only when you eat grain. The others, it's appropriate to eat in sukkah, but you don't violate any isur by eating that out of the sukkah. But on the first night, you have to. So here too, some say that the matzah has to be yours in order to be mekayim the mitzvah. So let me ask you this. If you have guests in your house for Pesach, have you ever seen that I would take a piece of matzah and give it to the person and tell them to please pick it up so that it's now become yours?
No, so actually, a lot of people have, each family that's at your Seder has their own 3 matzahs. Maybe that could be part of the reason why, okay. So that family has...
But that's... where is the kinyan?
When they pick it up, they're going to pick it up. They're
that's picking something up.
That's their own.
That's, no, it's not their own, it's yours. But in order for it to be a Kenyan, it has to be from hand to hand. Putting it on the table and then picking it up does not legally give them ownership. So what you would have to do is give it to them and they pick it up.
Or approve them.
What?
Or like those in the Lilith, you can give them a...
Yeah, but on Yantiv, what are you going to do on the night of Seder? Not going to take a pruta. And a pruta doesn't acquire anything that's movable. You have to pick it up. You actually have to pick it up. And that's why, just as an aside, just to explain it, when I sell the chametz and you come to authorize me, I always say, can you authorize me to sell your chametz? And to rent the premises upon which the chametz will be. So then I rent to the guy all of your properties where the chametz is being stored. Because if you rent real property, that can be accomplished through money, right? She gives me a rental fee for all of your properties. And any movable property that is on real property is automatically acquired. You don't have to pick it up. If I were not to rent the premises, the Gentile would have to come to every one of our houses and pick up every box of chametz, everything about it, before Yontif in order to legally acquire it. Because money, kesef, does not acquire metaltolin, anything that's movable. You have to pay for it, but that's not the form of legal acquisition. So that's why we do that. So the Taz asks the question, he said, I've never seen anybody make a kinyan to pick it up. So it's obviously, so what status does it have? It's sha'ul. It's only borrowed. I let you use my matzah, but it's still yours, or it's still mine. So how are you mekayim the mitzvah? If it has to be yours.
The days of carbon, if you had too large of a carbon, you ate together and you had to eat it.
Okay, but a carbon, the way you own it, yeah. You don't have to pick it up, thank God. You have to pull it. You need meshicha. So you have to pull the animal for the purpose of acquiring it. So if you want to get somebody else, if they had to own the korban, they would all, you know, get there and pull the pull the animal.
So when they ate together?
What?
So when they ate together?
For korban Pesach, everybody has to join together before you start shechting. Can't just invite anybody. Yes. It's called chabura. Everybody has to be part of a group. And you write a list, and you give it to the Kohen, all of these people have purchased the animal, we're all partners, please slaughter the animal on our behalf. And all of us can eat it. No one else is allowed to eat that meat of the korban. No one.
But they don't do
mashiach. They do mashiach when they buy it. When they buy the animal. Yeah. So, the Taz says that matzah, although you need legal ownership, You don't have to go through the formal kinyan for the following reason. Anything that I give to you, I can theoretically expect it back if it was not really given, if it was lent to you. If it's sha'ul, if I just lend you something, I expect it back. So in order to distinguish between lending and ownership, you have to make a kinyan. But with matzah, I don't expect the matzah back. So the mere fact that I put it down on the table is indication, and I put it in front of you, is indication enough that it's not called sha'ul, it's actually yours. That's all part of the whole halacha. But it has to be, but that's an interesting answer, that you demonstrate ownership. And I would go one step further. I had never heard that, but I like it. I would go one step further. Why at Seder night would it be important to engage in ownership? Why? Exactly. Because the halacha is kol ma shekana eved kana rabo. Whatever a slave acquires is automatically transferred to the master. So one of the ways in which we demonstrate that we are now in transitioning into freedom would be to show that I have halachic ownership. I have halachic ownership. And some explain that's why in Halach Ma'anya we engage in this ritual, even though it's halachically invalid, to say, Kol dichvin yese v'yechol. Let anybody who wants to come in, who's hungry, come in and eat. Kol ditzrich yese v'yifsach. Whoever needs a Korban Pesach should come in and make Korban Pesach with me. I just told you, that's you can't. You have to be designated on Erev Yom Tov before the Shechita. So this is nothing but a symbol. What's the symbol based on? To show that even though during the Yom Tov of Pesach, I am legally acquiring ownership, Ich bin doch der Balabas, I acknowledge that ultimately HaKadosh Baruch Hu owns everything that I have. And how do I make that symbol? I theoretically invite anybody else to partake because it all belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It doesn't belong to me either. But that's a very nice suggestion that picking it up would be a symbol of, and it would be particularly relevant to do it at this point, as the Rashbam says. Because don't forget, at the beginning of the Seder, matzah is not the symbol of freedom. Matzah is the symbol of avdus. We start the first words of Magid. Ha lachmo anya, diacholu avosono. It's lechem oni, poor man's bread. So then it transitions when you take the matzah. Matzah zusha onu ochlen al shuma, because of the geula shelo hispik bitzekam lahachmitz. There wasn't sufficient adequate time to allow the dough to rise when we were leaving. So that's the transition. After you say the whole Agada, and after you appreciate and recognize what HaKadosh Baruch Hu had done for us, the matzah now switches. And at what point? At Rabban Gamliel Omer. So at that particular point, it would make a lot of sense to pick it up to demonstrate ownership. Write that down someplace. It's really good. Really good. I like it. But there is another symbolism that we can understand in relationship to picking up the matzah and the maror, and specifically not picking up the Korban Pesach. There is a phrase in the beginning of the Haggadah, I'm sure you'll remember it. It's the last of the halachic paragraphs of the Haggadah. The first five paragraphs of the Haggadah, after the child asks his question, do not tell anything about the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Nothing. All they do is formulate the halachot of this evening. The story starts in paragraph number 6, Mitchila hayo'ovdei avodah zarah, v'achshav kevanu hamakom l'avodosav. So in the last of the fifth of last, it gives us the date of when the mitzvah of Sipitzias Mitzrayim starts. Yochol Merosh Chodesh. Talmud Lomar Bayom Ahu. I Bayom Ahu Yochol Mibod Yom. Talmud Lomar Ba'avur Zeh. Ba'avur Zeh Lo Amarti Ela B'Sha'a Sheyesh Matzo Umoror Munachim Lefonecha. Good. The Mechilta, which this phrase is taken from, the Mechilta is the Midrash Halacha and Sefer Shmot, adds two more words. Munachim al shulchanecha, which lead many Rishonim to conclude that you actually have to have matzah and maror on the table in order to demonstrate, in order to be obligated in the midst of Sipitzias Mitzrayim. The way our phrase reads, that the mitzvah of Sipitzias Mitzrayim is only at the time when the theoretically matzah and maror are operative. That's the night of the 15th. Not during the day, not from Rosh Chodesh. But if it says in the text, munachim al shulchanecha, you have to have matzah and maror on your table. And if for some reason you don't have matzah and maror, you're not obligated to engage in Sipitzias Mitzrayim. So, in the time of the Mikdash, what did they say? Bavur ze lo amarti ela b'sha'a shiyesh Pesach matzah umoror munachim lefanecha. In the time of the Mikdash, they would not omit the Korban Pesach. They would say, when are we obligated to engage in Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim? When I have the Korban Pesach, the matzah umoror. But today, what is munachim al shulchanecha? Only the matzah maror. Therefore, we're going to see in a minute Rabbi Yosef Tovel, who even demonstrates this further. So the function of picking it up is to show that they are the trigger of my mitzvah of Sipitzias Mitzrayim. It is because of the matzah, because of the maror that I have or am obligated to eat tonight. Under those circumstances, that is why I am obligated to engage in Sipitzias Mitzrayim. And it is further highlighted, I mentioned this last week at the Haggadah Shir, if you remember, how does Rashi interpret the phrase, Ba'avur Zeh Osa Hashem Li B'tzeisi Mi Mitzrayim? Ba'avur Zeh. What does that mean? Right, that's right. It means you point because the word zeh usually. But what does it normally mean, bavur zeh? On account of what? What God took me out of Mitzrayim, bavur zeh, on account of what? Because I was a slave, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu had mercy on us. Because of this, He took us out of Mitzrayim. That's the simple reading of the text. Rashi says, bavur zeh. She'akayim mitzvas matzah u'mitzvas maror. Why did God take me out? Not because I was working 210 years very hard, because He wanted me to have the opportunity to fulfill mitzvot. That's why He knew under Mitzrayim I can't do so. So you emphasize by picking up the matzah u'maror that was the very reason, at least according to Rashi, why I am being delivered from Mitzrayim, to enable each and every one of us to be mekayim the specific mitzvot of Pesach, Matzah, and Maror.
Wouldn't that also explain an idea that's important to us when the very first?
Excellent. Yes.
Because this is different than how it, you know.
Good. Code. Excellent. Excellent. That's why the Rashbam says that you should pick it up kidei laharot chibatan. Because to appreciate the fact that this Yom Tov is Zman Chayruteinu, which enables us to observe this mitzvah and subsequently all 613 mitzvot, so that's why you raise it and hopefully gain an appreciation in the eyes of all the Mesubin. Lulav doesn't have that symbolism. that the lulav is related to our freedom. So because this is such an important symbol in demonstration, that's an excellent thing. Write that down and say it over to say that. Write that down. Good. Excellent. Very good. Good. However, there is a second interpretation, and he believes that the picking up is to be done at a different location. And I'll see, take a little survey, says, and see how many people do this. So the author of this opinion is Rabbi Yosef Tov Elam, a Ashkenazic scholar, who wrote a poem about all of the halachos of Hilchos Pesach, and that poem became part of our sidur in shuls where they say Yotzer l'Shabbos Hagadol. So there are I don't know of any shul in Teaneck that recites the Yotzrot of Shabbos Hagadol, but I'm sure some of you grew up where they recited Yotzrot on Shabbos Shkalim, Parshas Zachar, and Parshas Parah, and Parshas HaChodesh, and Shkalim and HaChodesh had for Shachris and Musaf, and is for Shabbos Hagadol as well. And it's recited right before Kedusha. Nechaya Hemesim, and then you say like Misod Chachamim Unavonim, like we do on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. We start Chazaras Hashatz, and we start saying Misod. That means we're going to start saying all these poems. So there is this poem written by Yosef Tov Elam, who wrote all of the halachas of Pesach in poetic form. And he writes as follows: Vikad Ochal Yechtze achas mishalosh matzos v'ein bracha ima. Kadocha, before you eat, you divide one of the three matzot v'ein bracha ima, but you don't make a bracha. Normally, when you are botseya, what does the word botseya mean?
To cut.
So we all have the practice that before you actually say Hamotzi Lechem and Aretz on a Friday night, you take your knife and you run it through the challah a little, you start cutting it. That's called Bitziah. So, and then, normally, what do? You say Hamotzi Lechem and Aretz. Says Tovel, Hana, we're breaking the matzah now, but don't make Hamotzi yet, because we're not ready to eat anything yet. Vein Brachima. Now, so he says you divide it. Now, this is a real chidush on his part, because Rambam and most other Rishonim believe that Yachatz takes place right before Motzi Matzah. So after the whole Haggadah, you have three whole matzahs in front of you. Whole matzahs. Now, after you say Goal Yisrael and you drink the second cup of wine, what do? You wash. And right before you say Hamotzi Lechem and Aretz, what do? You break one of them.
But you have to go on at that point?
No, but we do it much earlier.
Because of him. Rambam says you have to sing the song a little. Every kid is going to have to sing the song differently. Kadesh Urchatz, Karpas.
Yachatz.
No Yachatz. Magid. Magid, Rachza, Yachatz, Motzi Matzah. That's the way the Rambam taught his kids in Ganrina. Because he has to, because that's the Rambam Shita. Tov Elam, Yosef Tov Elam, said, no, we're going to break the matzah before we start reading the Haggadah. And it's universally been adopted that this is the time to make yachatz. And the reason why he did so is to combine two interpretations of the word lechem oni. One interpretation of lechem oni is from aniyah, like in the Aseres HaDibros, lo sa'aneh bereyacha et shaker. It means lechem she'onin alav dvarim harbei. The bread upon which many words will be said. That's the entire Haggadah. But then there is a second interpretation, more famous, Lechem Oni, poor man's bread. So the way a poor man eats, he eats just broken pieces. He doesn't have a whole bread. So in order to combine the two interpretations, he suggested that the yachatz come at that particular point. So our Baal Haggadah, who is unknown, we don't know who put together, we know where he got all the stuff from, but we don't know who actually composed the Haggadah in the shape that we have it today. He, our Baal Haggadah, has accepted Tovelim's interpretation. So he also says that you take three matzos. Rambam says you only take two matzos. And then you break one of them. Because Rambam believes that the halacha of lechem oni supersedes, overrides the requirement of lechem mishneh. Even though Pesach is a Yom Tov, and every Yom Tov, just like Shabbat, needs lechem mishneh, Pesach is the exception to the rule. And therefore, when he says Hamotzi Lechem in Aretz, does Rambam, he only has 1.5 matzos in front of him. We follow, now I shouldn't say we, Ashkenazic Jewry, Sephardic Jewry only has two matzos, because they follow the Rambam. However, we follow Ashkenazic Tovelim, and he starts with three matzos. And he says, Mechza Bikeara, in line 2, half of the broken matzah you put on the ke'ara, on the seder plate, u'mechza b'shulchan lahasima, and half, you put it down on the table someplace, to what? Put it away for later. That's for the afikoman. Afikoman. So let me ask you, do you actually have matzah on your seder plate?
No.
Very few of us have. I think there's a little round circle for it. Mm-hmm. No?
No.
Okay.
No,
there's a kind where the plate's on top and there's a space, like shelves.
Yeah, shelves underneath. Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, I have that also. But that's the way it should be. And he writes, because the matzah has to be placed on the ke'ara. Everything that you will be eating tonight belongs on the ke'ara. The maror, the charoses, all the symbol food, the shank bone, the egg, everything belongs on the seder plate. Now you eat matzah, so the matzah belongs on the seder plate. And that's what he says. Now listen to this. Mosheich mehakeara shnei tavshile. At this point, after yachatz, you remove from the keara the two cooked items. Shnei tavshilin. One is the shank bone and an egg, according to us, our practice. What are they? He didn't necessarily have an egg. De'inun bisra v'kavara tzlili. Those two things are meat and an egg that are roasted. Inami or garma ubishule. Some type of meat and cooked item, some other cooked item, whatever those shnei tavshilin are, you remove them at this point of the seder, and then umagbia ke'ara, you pick up the whole ke'ara, which has matzah in it and maror and everything, v'lema, and then he says halach ma'anya kulei. You recite all of Holach Ma'anya at this point in time. So why in the world do you pick up the Ke'ara right after Yachatz? Why do you pick up the Ke'ara after Yachatz? And the reason is, according to him, is based on the following Rashbam. So if you look below, the Rashbam gives an explanation. Yeah?
A simple thing would be that when we're inviting other people to come and eat, you're lifting up the plate. You don't want things to be on the plate that you're not offering them to eat. We're not offering the meat to eat. We're not offering the egg to eat. We don't eat those two things. The other things on the plate we are going to eat. So,
okay, interesting. So before you extend the invitation, before Halach Ma'anya, good, that's possible. So now let's see the Rashbam. The Rashbam is with the bold caption, the Ein Okeres HaShulchan. In the time of the Mishnah, People did not eat on tables like we eat. Everybody had a little stack table, and that's why they reclined. You sat on a couch and reclined over to look to take the food at the table. That's the way they all ate. And therefore, the Mishnah says that after you make Kiddush and after Karpas, Okrin es Hashulchan, you remove the stack table. Remove the stack table. Whatever the food is, whatever, just move it out. Now, when you have tables like this, it's a little difficult to move your dining room table out of the dining room. A little difficult. So the Rashbam will now say, let's read, V'ein okeres ha-shulchan, that you can't necessarily remove the table. Shemitzvah hi la'akoras ha-shulchan. The mitzvah is to actually get rid of the stack table. Kidei lekaman, as the Gemara explains later on. Why? Ki heichi delehevei hekeira latinokos. So that the kid will start asking questions. What's going on here?
Time for benching.
We just made kiddush. We had a little karpas. And where's the gefilte fish? Where's my roast beef? And the mother's taking away the tables already. It's supposed to ask questions, to stimulate the child's curiosity. The hani mili lididhu. That was only where they moved the table, that was only for them. The hevelahu shulchan katan. Because they had little small tables. You remove the stack table in front of what? The person who is leading the Haggadah, as well as everybody else. This is in the 12th century, we can't move the dining room table. We remove the ka'ara. Sheba matzo umara ushne tavshilin the sof hashulchan. What we do is we pick up the ka'ara and put it at the end of the table. V'dai lonu bekach. And this is sufficient to do what? To accomplish what? The heker, to get the kids stimulated, to ask questions. So according to the Rashbam, and according to Rabbi Yosef Tov Elam, the lifting of the matzah maror is not necessarily only the matzah maror. It's not referring to lifting it when you say matzah zushan or oklin. It's at the beginning of the seder, right before you start halach ma'anya. And the purpose, as is so many other things that take place, is to stimulate the child's curiosity. That's my only reason why we eat karpas. There's no reason to eat karpas. But normally what happens after Kiddush is you wash and eat bread. All of a sudden we're having vegetables, potatoes or petrushka, you know, white celery, petrushka. That's what my mother always used to use for karpas, petrushka. Why she took petrushka? Vaisachnish. Because I'm sure her father had petrushka. Do a lot of people use potatoes? It became even more popular to use potatoes when the Chaya Adam, famous Chaya Adam, said that you're not allowed to eat potatoes on Pesach because they're kidney oat. For our parents' generation, that would have been literally nothing to eat. It's not like they had every product available today. But Reb Chaim, the Rav's grandfather, said about the Chayadam, he said, Tapuche Adama hu Chaye Ha'adam. The Hachaye Adam hu Tapuach Adama. He said that. That's what Chaim said. Yeah. To say that, no idea. No idea. So anyhow, yeah.
Potato starch.
Yeah, so that's what the Rashbam explains. And it also explains why, and what's the reason why he said that before you pick it up or move it, you have to remove the Psar Pesach, the shank bone and the egg. Why do you have to do that? Why do you have to do that? So the explanation given is not that you're going to be eating, it would appear as if you're eating, because by Rabban Gamliel, what's the phrase that we use? Pesach zusha anu ochlin al shumma. Here, if you're picking up the ke'ara, nobody's eating it. So why should he make a point that you have to remove it? So the answer given by some Rishonim to explain it is shelo yehe nira kimakdish Pesach. It's as if you're sanctifying it by pick that the way they used to go ahead and sanctify parts of a korban were to pick it up. So when you donate, if you donate a korban mincha, you donate the flour and the oil and the spices, the kohen would pick, you would pick it up and demonstrate that this is now dedicated for the mikdash. You're not allowed to have private benefit from it. So he felt that if somebody is picking up the korban pesach, the shank bone, it looks like kimagbia kachim, and he's being makdish kachim bachutz. Again, you can't have kachim outside of the Beis HaMikdash, so that's another explanation. So those are the now three explanations. One is laharos hachiba. Two is simply to engage in curiosity, kill the cat, and then to show the symbol of acquisition. That's really good. I like that as well. That's for the practice, and it's either during Rab Gamliel's time, which is our practice. Some people also pick up the kara right before Holach Manya, because it's quoted in Shulchan Aruch to do so. This explanation of Rabbi Yosef Tov Elam is that how many people do that? Notice if they pick up the Ke'ara, you do that. Okay. Yeah, good. Okay, good. Okay. If you flip the page, I want to move on to another topic for a few minutes. And this topic is about the Charoses. I apologize for the sources being a little on the small side. A little on the small side. I don't know what happened. Yeah, I know. We're not going to read that Tosis. Don't worry about it. Yeah. So, if you look at the Mishnah in Maseches Psachim on Source Aleph, the Mishnah says, Heviu lefanav, they bring the Ke'ara in front of him, mitabel Bechazeres ad shemagia lepaperes apas. You dip something. It's a very difficult phrase. You dip something even before you get to hamotzi. This is talking about karpas. You dip something before you get to hamotzi. What chazeres is a shear unto itself. Heviu lefanav matzah. V'chazeres, v'charoses. They brought, as part of the Ke'ara, matzah, moror, which is called chazeres, and charoses. So in the first part of the Mishnah is operating with a family that does not have a second vegetable available for moror. I mean for karpas. They don't have another vegetable. So what are they going to have to eat for karpas? Moror. Whatever you use, romaine lettuce, you're going to have to eat moror for karpas. Mm-hmm. However, if you do so, that's what the whole Gemara goes on, you have to make alachilas moror when you're eating karpas. Even though you're not yet fulfilling the mitzvah of moror. Because if you're engaged in the ma'aseh ha-mitzvah, even though you're not being mekayim the mitzvah, you have to make the berchas ha-mitzvah. So that's what the Gemara goes on to explain. But I don't want to elaborate. I want to explain the charoses. Then the Mishnah continues, Ushnei tavshilin, and two cooked items. And you bring the charoses, af al pi she'ein charoses mitzvah, even though there is no mitzvah to bring the charoses. There's a mitzvah to bring matzah. There's a mitzvah to bring maror. There's a mitzvah to bring dishnei tavshilin. So why do I bring the charoses if there's no mitzvah? Why do I bring it to the table? So the simple explanation is that there is no mitzvah in and of itself to eat charoses. However, it's brought mishum kapa, kuf pei aleph, which means the sharpness of the maror. Since the maror is very sharp, Chazal did not want us to experience difficulty eating the maror, and therefore they said, take something sweet and dip it in to somehow diminish the sharpness of the maror. That's the Tanakhama, the first opinion. Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadok omer mitzvah. Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadok says, there is a mitzvah to bring the charoses. And he doesn't explain why there is a mitzvah to bring the charoses. Yeah. Now.
Isn't it unusual that it's a mitzvah because didn't they always bring dips? Like, wasn't that that time that they did?
Yeah. But why did it have to be what we call charoses? Yeah. Now. Take a look at, on the left-hand side, the Perush HaMishnayis. This is the Rambam's explanation of the Mishnah. And he wrote this when he was all of 18 years old. Perush HaMishnayis on all of every Masechta in Shas. And look at the next to the last line where it says in the middle, the Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadok. Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadok. Omer, charoses mitzvah. Everybody have it? Next to the last line. You got it? Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadok omer, charoses mitzvah. Lida'ato, according to his opinion, shechayav adam livarech. Asher kedishanu b'mitzvotav v'tzivanu al achilat charoset. You have to make a bracha just like you make al achilas matzah and al achilas maror. You have to make a bracha al achilas charoset, and that means you have to eat at least a kezayis of charoses.
Yummy.
A charos, yes, a kezayis of charoses, and you make a bracha on it. However, says the Rambam, V'eina halacha. The halacha, says the Rambam, I paskin against Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadok. I don't believe it's a mitzvah. I believe, like the Chachamim, you just bring it to diminish the sharpness of the maror. Hence, of course there is no bracha. Of course there is no obligation to eat a kezayis of charoses based on the fact that it's just supplementing or making life a little more easy for the maror. However, on the right-hand side of the page, underneath the Gemara, where it says Rambam Perek Zayin Chametz U'Matzah, the Rambam himself says in Halacha Yud Bet, Achilat Maror Eina Mitzvah Min HaTorah Bifnei Atzma. Consumption of the Maror is not a separate independent mitzvah. It is dependent upon the Korban Pesach. If there is a Korban Pesach, you are obligated to eat maror and matzah together with the Korban Pesach. Shemitzvas asei achas le'echol b'sar ha-pesach al matzah umrorim. Because there is one mitzvah asei to eat the Korban Pesach, the meat of the Pesach, together with matzah and mara. Yeah.
Mara is symbolically negative. It's supposed to be the reverse of.
Yes.
So why would we make a bracha on something that's negative?
Because the Chachamim told us, the Torah told us to eat it.
Yeah,
That's one. The Torah says, "Va'achlu et habasar ba'layla hazeh ki imtzliyesh u'matzot al mirorim yochluhu." Shmot chapter 12, verse 7. So you'll see the Torah says it's a mitzvah midoraisa if there is a korban pesach. If there is a korban pesach, umidivrei sofrim. Le'echol hamoror levado b'leil zeh afilu ein shom korban pesach. And the mitzvah of a maror is only midrabbanon today, because there was no korban pesach. So the rabbi said, even in the absence of a korban pesach, I want you to eat maror. Now that's the way he describes maror. What does he say? It's midivrei sofrim mitzvah le'echol hamoror. Now go back to Halacha Yud Aleph for a minute. No, right on top of that Yud Beis. Same source. Hacharoses mitzvah midivrei sofrin. The Haroses is a rabbinic mitzvah. Divrei sofrin is a code name for the Rabbanan, according to the Rambam. Zecher letit shahayu ovdim bo b'mitzrayim. It is to commemorate the cement that Am Yisrael had to make when they were putting together the bricks. And then suddenly the Rambam becomes a cookbook. A cookbook. V'ketzad osin osa. How do you make charoses? Lokhim timarim. You take dates. Or grogerus, or figs. Or tzmukin, or raisins. Or kayotze bohen. V'dorsin osan. And you crush them. V'nosnin l'tochan chometz, you put vinegar in. U'mitavlin oso b'tavlin, and you put spices in it. K'motit b'teven u'mevi'in oso al ha'shulchan b'leilei ha'pesach. So, if you read this Rambam, and you also read the Rambam in Perush HaMishnayos, would you have any questions to ask?
Yes.
What question? What question would you ask in light of what he just said?
So, no, you should eat. You should make a bracha and eat a whole ksayah.
Oh, good. But in Perush HaMishnah, he said if it's a mitzvah, you have to make a bracha and you have to eat a whole kizayis. Mm-hmm. Except I said it's not, the halacha is not like that. Right. Then that's in his commentary to the Mishnah. Then in his halachic work, he goes ahead and says what? It is a mitzvah. So how come he didn't? First of all, what happened? So the fact that the Rambam changed his mind from age 18 to 44 is not a shocker. The Rambam does that a lot. He was an 18-year-old pisher when he wrote it. He understood. Then he got a little smarter and he decided to paskin like Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddok. But the question is, if it is a mitzvah, why didn't he include that you have to make a bracha on it? Why didn't he include that you have to eat a kezias, like everything else that you have to eat?
But even in Yud Aleph, Yud Beis is different. In Yud Aleph, he says it is a mitzvah.
I know.
And Yud Beis, it's not a mitzvah.
No, mitzvah. Yud Beis is mitzvah of maror. He's talking about maror in Yud Beis. Yeah. Which is a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah midoraisa when there is a korban pesach. It's a mitzvah midorabanan when there is no korban pesach.
And don't we bedafen not eat a kazayah?
Good. So, look at the last phrase of that Rambam. The last phrase, the last line of Halacha Yud Aleph, after he gets finished with his recipe, u'mevi'in osa al hashulchan b'leilei ha'pesach. What does that mean?
Bring it to your table.
Just bring it to your table.
It's not on the table.
It's no. He's here. Everything is before in this Rambam. He's not talking with the Seder itself.
He's saying, just bring it.
Good. Why would the Rambam have to? Of course, you got to bring it to the table. Where are you going to keep it in the closet? So it's a very difficult Rambam, but apparently the Rambam believed that Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddok is right that it's a mitzvah, but when he was 44, he said it's not a mitzvah to eat. The mitzvah is to have it on the table as a zecher litit. Zecher litit. Then elsewhere the Rambam says, well, that's very nice. Once it's on the table, you are going to use charoset for every act of eating that takes place, say, the night. When you eat matzah, you dip it into charoses. When you eat maror, you dip it into charoses. You eat karpas, you dip it into charoses. You would have dipped Korban Pesach in it, but there is a halacha, you're not allowed to diminish the taste of a korban. You have to eat it the way it's prepared, and that's it. So the Rambam came up with a little compromise. When he was 18 years old, he understood that Rabbi Lazar Bereb Tzadok believed that charoses is a mitzvah to eat, and you have to make a bracha. And that, he said, ain't a halacha. Halacha is against him. Okay, if the halacha is against him, he probably believes that the halacha is like the chachamim. That the reason why you bring charoses is simply to diminish the sharpness of the mara. When he becomes 44 years old and he writes his Mishnah Torah, he says, no, it is a mitzvah. But it's a mitzvah simply to have on the table as a zecher for the tit. Zecher le tit. Not to diminish the taste of the mara. And once it is now brought to the table, all of the tibulim, and according to the Rambam, you are mitabel many more than two times. Every time you eat matzah. So when you eat matzah at the beginning of the meal, in charoses. When you eat maror, in charoses. When you eat korech, in charoses. When you eat afikoman, in charoses. Everything's with charoses. Rambam obviously liked charoses. Because, what? Yeah, good. And it now has the symbol of the tit. Others, not the Rambam, but others say that it was not so much for the tit, but rather based on an unusual midrash that claims that the Egyptians took little babies and put them as part of the tit, and when they built their buildings, they crushed the children, putting the rocks one on top of the other. So it is more of a zecher for the agony of the children, as opposed to what? For the cement, simply the cement of the bricks. And that interpretation, though it's not Rambam's, I like that interpretation because so much of the Seder revolves around children. Revolves around children. And the fact that it revolves around children is the ultimate nechama for us. We're in galut for a very long time. What is our saving grace? And I'll give you can throw it into your discussions as well. When Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon were sitting in Bnei Brak, so many historians believe that this table was a discussion whether or not they're going to join the Bar Kokhba rebellion. Bar Kokhba rebellion. And the Bar Kokhba rebellion was turned out terribly tragic. In Beitar, according to, again, most historians, we lost 1 million Jews in Beitar. It was the second largest Holocaust that we've ever had. Second largest. And what was the nechama for these four rabbanim? Atshebo Talmideim. If you have students, the future is good. No matter how difficult life is, if you have students who are willing to perpetuate our tradition, we will always survive. And that's the contrast between the tit, the charoses, and the play on the children. They tried, the Egyptians understood, that if you want to kill Am Yisrael for the future, attack their children. Either throw them into the Yamsuf, or as the Medrash says, kill them by putting them in as the pot of the bricks. So the counter to that, the anti, is to place enormous emphasis on the children. And if we see children participating, that gives us enormous hope and encouragement for the future, that despite the fact that the Geulah has not yet come, we can still look forward to and appreciate a Geulah going forward. Yes?
Can I ask you a question about the Haroset?
Sure.
Are there any, and I guess you'd say it about Mara too, is there any like definite thing that makes you have it be Haroset? In other words, obviously the Sephardic Haroset is very different from the Haroset that we're used to.
Anything
the Mara Romaine or the Mara or the
Mara Romaine is, there are five things that the Mishnah says are acceptable for Mara.
Okay.
Number one is Romaine lettuce.
Okay.
Horseradish is number three.
Endives
is number two.
And also where you live and what they have.
Correct. That's exactly. And Haros is the same thing. So in Europe, I don't know about you, my family never had dates, never had crushed dates or figs. What did they take? They took nuts, apples, crushed it, wine. Wine doesn't say anything in the Mishnah.
So Haroset, there's no, like, he gives a recipe here, but there's no, like...
No in the Mishnah.
But what are the parameters? What does it have to have?
It has to be a pasty something.
Okay.
A pasty, that's all.
So there's no real parameters.
No real parameters. Yeah.
Well, says about that. When they say their meaning is we're ready to die al Kiddush Hashem. We're ready to die saying.
Right, yes, yeah. Yeah, there are a lot of good, yeah. All right, we'll stop here. So there's no share next.